Hello, and welcome to the Anti-Fragile Tarot podcast. This is your resident card slinger, Susanna, here with the first October episode of the month. So, happy spoopy season. I do not think that I will be having any interview episodes this month. I did not get to interview my card slinging adversary at the Jersey City Oddities Market in time. But rest assured, I will be interviewing him at some point. And then you'll get to hear us go toe-to-toe. You can also see us go toe-to-toe if you listen to this episode in time and you make it to the October 13th Jersey City Oddities Market. I will also be doing another event the day before. I will be working with one of my oldest friends, Murdoch. Some of you may know him as David. With the Arts on the Hudson Fest, October 12th at Hamilton Park, also in downtown Jersey City. Totally free. It's going to be super fun. I got to pop by one of them, although I had to work my hospital job that day, so I didn't get to really stay, but I really wanted to because it was really cool. Anyway, I will be reading cards at that event as well, so you get two chances to see me, October 12th and October 13th, 2019. Don't say I didn't give you a warning. But that's neither here nor there. I have decided, with the help of one of my awesome Patreon patrons, Amy, to do this episode on tarot readings and pop culture. I talked about pop culture magic and pop culture paganism before, but I haven't really talked about tarot in media. By the way, pardon any weird noises or different sounds. I got a really nice mic and I'm still kind of learning how to use it, where's best to record. I have the whole apartment to myself now, no more roommates, still several cats and a husband. So I'm trying out different places to record. Plus, windows are open with ACs in them because it's still kind of hot. I know it's October, but it's also going to be like 90 degrees next week. So, there's that. Thanks for bearing with me with the growing pains, and hopefully this is just the setup for a better sounding podcast once we get past those. So, disclaimers done. I did want to chat about tarot cards in media. So, oftentimes when I am reading at a market, kind of jumping around a little bit, as I do, when I'm reading at a market, I always have a Rider-Waite deck with me. Always, always, always. For two reasons. Number one, it's the deck that is easiest for me to read. Number two, it is classic and a lot of people love a classic look. However, a lot of people don't love a classic look. Some people may be turned off by those cards in particular or just want something different. So I always have at least one other deck. Usually something very modern. The Mystic Mondays and Luminous Spirit decks are two of my go-tos, as well as the Wild Unknown. I will have thematically appropriate decks sometimes. So oftentimes I'll have a vampire or Halloween tarot for a Halloweeny deck. If it's a queer event, I'll have the Next World or Tarot of the Silicon Dawn. And I have a couple other decks. I have cat-themed decks that also get a lot of play. So those are things I like to work with, but I always have the Centennial Smith-Waite of some kind with me. Usually my big borderless edition, but occasionally I have my one of my travel decks with me. I actually have two travel decks right now. I have a smaller Centennial Smith-Waite. At least I think this one is a full travel deck, although it's entirely possible. No, this might not be it. Anyway, I'm just rambling. I'm actually recording this episode right next to my somewhat new altar space-ish setup. And the point of all this was that when I am explaining my decks to people, especially people who know nothing about tarot, I'll often say, so I have this classic deck. This might be the deck that you've seen in pop culture. You might have seen this one in movies. However, that's also not always true. Full disclosure, I am not necessarily the most well-versed in pop culture in general. You know, there's a lot of movies I haven't watched or don't watch. I have a lot of trouble with horror movies because I have anxiety and I don't need to have nightmares forever like I sometimes do when I watch horror. So sometimes I do miss out on really great movies because it's hard for me to watch them. And it sucks, and I do power through on occasion when it's needed. I'm also getting a little bit better about them since the anniversary of my dad's passing was 3 years ago now. So I'm a little better at dealing with some of the stuff that I really just couldn't do for a couple of years. But my personal note of tarot in pop culture is somewhat limited. But that's okay, because we're going to go over a few different things in this, not just tarot and pop culture, but like tarot in media specifically. But we're also going to go over pop culture tarot decks and some of that stuff. So, when Amy suggested that I do this episode, the first thing that actually popped into my mind was episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer that included tarot. I'm fairly certain there was more than one, but there's one in particular that I'm thinking of where Tara and Willow were reading cards, and they were actually reading with the Cosmic Tarot, which is a deck that was on my wish list for a while because the cards that they chose in Buffy were really, really pretty. But I wound up not getting it for a variety of reasons. It's been low on my list. I do try to prioritize indie decks. I didn't like a lot of the other cards, but I certainly wouldn't say no if I wound up in possession of it. So I was thinking about that, and I was also thinking about a recent episode of Sabrina, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which I really, really like, by the way. People who work more with Satanism and Luciferianism, theistic Satanism as opposed to atheistic Satanism, really thought that the ritual and spell work in it was great. Jason Miller, in particular, took note of the spell work in it. I did recently see the episode that dealt with tarot. And all right, so here's the deal with the description and depiction of tarot in the media. It's often very, very showy. And I get it, right? It's supposed to be showy. It's showing and not telling. It's stuff that deals with actual supernatural stuff, as opposed to most readings that readers are doing, which are definitely a little more mundane, especially the way that I do them. But I don't mind some theatrics in my media. I don't. Anyone who's looking at a show like Buffy or Chilling Adventures of Sabrina or even the Raven Cycle books by Maggie Stiefvater, which are really great, by the way. I really recommend them. Anyone looking at those pieces of media and expecting that to be a hyper-realistic depiction of what a tarot card reading is like probably should remember that there's actual demons and zombies and monsters and vampires and such in those things. So expecting this hyper-realistic portrayal is not useful. At the same time, it does make it more difficult for those of us who do this more seriously. Not saying that people who involve more supernatural elements aren't being serious. I don't mean that at all. I mean, you know, it does make it a little harder for people to understand that not every tarot card reading is like that. Then again, call me elitist here, but I'm not that interested in the opinions of someone who's going to be so easily swayed about what tarot is and is not by a TV show that is not hyper-realistic. I mean, if you're thinking that's all real, I don't know what to tell you. It can be a little difficult for those of us who do professional readings in the real world to combat that expectation of smoke and mirrors. Although I will say that more often than not, people appreciate my approach more than they would if I did involve more theatrics. I've definitely had some people running events or even just friends suggest that I dress the part more, or do certain things, or have certain tchotchkes on my table. I would love a crystal ball, for instance, for personal use, but I don't know that I would have one on my tarot table because I don't do any scrying. So I did have to have one at an event once, and that was fine. The whole room was kind of, it had spheres. It was a whole thing. But it's something that I think about a lot when I am crafting my aesthetic. You know, I'm very careful not to sell something that I don't do. I do know that since I started wrapping my hair, for those of you who might be tuning in for the first time with this episode, I am Jewish. I am married. I am polyamorous, but I am married. And it's considered a mitzvah to cover your hair when you're married. Or when you're praying. There's a few other things. I'm Reformed Jewish, which means that I like to compare us to Episcopalians, but I know it's not a perfect analogy. We do the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs aren't commandments. It's more like this is a thing that would be pleasing to God. It's not a commandment. There are people who do strive to fulfill as many mitzvahs as they humanly can. But in Reform Judaism, undertaking a mitzvah is something that you should do because you personally have a connection to it. You're not just doing it for the obligation of fulfilling a mitzvah. You're doing it because it's something that enhances your own experience and understanding and connection to Judaism. So I started covering my hair. You know, I don't wear hijabs. I don't wear more African styles. And I tie my hair a couple of very certain ways that are either more neutral or more specifically visibly Jewish to those who know what a Jewish head wrap looks like. In the tri-state area, you're probably more familiar with Orthodox women wearing wigs and a wide headband. That's a more common minhag or cultural standard for fulfilling a mitzvah. But you're not going to see as many tichels or head rats or mitpachat because they're just, that's more of a Sephardic Jewish thing, not an Ashkenazi Jewish thing. Anyway, I know, I keep going on tangents. It's why my longtime listeners are still listening to me, right? Point being, I've had a couple people point out, oh yeah, you're a tarot reader. You have your hair wrapped and everything. It's like, no. These are separate things. So yes, you do need to think about what the typical presentation of a tarot card reader in media is. Something else I thought about was when a friend of mine reached out to me to consult about the tarot cards they were going to use in the screenplay. And we worked out some different iterations, which was really, really fun because I was like, all right, so here's like the really on the nose reading. Like if you really want to communicate this in very distinct fashion to your viewers in a way that they will probably understand immediately with absolutely no explanation, here's the cards that you could do that with. And she and I both agreed that this was not really what the scene called for. The reader in it was not a polished professional. They were scrappy. Pretty sure they were homeless, younger, you know, still kind of making it work. And that kind of reading was not really what was called for. So we played through a bunch of different options for what could still be easily communicated and what would work very well visually, but wouldn't be quite so on the nose as like Death and the Tower and I don't remember what else I had in there. I probably had the Hanged Man or something. And that's something else to consider too, right? When you're looking at tarot in the media, you're often seeing a lot of major arcana cards, which, again, makes a lot of sense because it's a visual medium. This is also going to sound really, really elitist, and I'm so sorry, but you're sort of working with the lowest common denominator here. You're working with, all right, what cards can we show that are easily identifiable, evocative, and easier for people without knowledge of tarot to grasp? You can't assume that your average viewer is going to know anything about tarot cards. You just can't. That's not even being elitist. That's just being real. Most people don't really know. I'm very strongly in support of anyone can learn to read tarot. And if you use 2 seconds to look at a card, you can probably come to a pretty good understanding of what that card is, especially if it's a deck like the Rider-Waite or the Morgan Greer or, you know, one of the more traditional decks, Rider-Waite style with illustrated minors. Blah, 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 blah. But, you know, we need to think about what's going to be most easily identifiable. And a lot of the time, that's the majors. They're bigger cards. They're bigger concepts. They're easier to work with. Although there are some minor arcana cards that have definitely made it more mainstream. You know, to kind of start pivoting away from TV shows and movies and books so much, you'll see tarot card jewelry. And you'll often see the Empress, the Sun, the Magician. You'll also often see the Three of Swords because it's so evocative. It's a heart, not an anatomical heart. Although I think the Sola Busca tarot might be more anatomical. I might be wrong here. Someone fact check me. I should be fact checking me, but we're not going to do that because we're going to pretend that we're having a conversation, right? Right. So, anyway, it's, you know, a Valentine's-y heart. Bright red against a gray background with three swords bisecting, or I guess trisecting, this heart stuck right in there. And that image is just so clear and simple and evocative that it's made its way into the mainstream despite it being a minor arcana card. I think it's really interesting. It's certainly not my favorite. And like any good hipster, I am mildly annoyed at its prevalence and people's insistence on staying with it. As such, I've often come to devalue it a little bit in my readings, which has its pros and cons. I mean, obviously it's pain and it's stuff you got to work through, but I often wind up reading it now because of its visibility, because of its prevalence, because people have these preconceived notions about it. I often wind up being like, all right, it's pain, but it's not the end of the world. I mean, to get medical about it for a second, it's a 3 on a scale of 1 to 10. Ten of Swords, way worse. Do you see the Ten of Swords in media? Sometimes, actually. I will say that as tarot is getting a little bit more mainstream, I feel like we're seeing more representation of the minor arcana, which is awesome. So yeah, that's definitely something that I've noticed in sort of media and mainstream portrayals of tarot. There's also an interesting thing where you almost never get a tarot reader who just reads tarot. You often wind up getting people who don't just read tarot. They almost always are psychic or mediums or read palms or scry or use Ouija boards. And for sure, I seem to be a little, I wouldn't say unique, but I definitely focus rather exclusively on tarot with the occasional foray into Lenormand and Oracle decks, as opposed to a lot of other readers that do diversify. I do plan to diversify at some point, a little. This is definitely a conversation for another podcast, but the things that make tarot work for me are not things that I'm entirely convinced of in other methods of divination. Lenormand and Oracle decks, particularly how picky I am about Oracle decks, still work with the way that I read tarot, because it's about the reader, not about the tool, if that makes sense. I also think that tarot, again, sort of, I'm tying it back in, don't worry, sort of going against the way that media tends to portray tarot, this method is not nearly as fatalistic, set in stone, as most media portrayals of tarot are. It's a method of introspection and reflection, and something to consider about what the future might be like. It is not... I think part of the thing that has deterred me from palm reading for years is that it seems so fatalistic, right? Like, short of scarification, you can't modify what's in your palm. So, you know, that's where I haven't really worked with palm reading as much. But I don't know much about palm reading. I could be wrong. I felt very similarly about astrology until some of my astrology friends kind of talked to me about what was going on, and, you know, I realized that it could be used a lot more reflectively than fatalistically. So, you know, the way that you see this kind of thing done in media, it's usually so fatalistic, and so this is what's going to happen, instead of giving you an option. Although I will say, again, I really like how Sabrina, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, handles this kind of thing, because the cards were sort of a way for people to work with their situations, give them some advance warning so they can maybe make different choices. I did like that a lot. And to sort of pivot from that, something else that this topic made me think of is the connection of fandom and tarot. There aren't a lot of official fandom tarot decks. There's a few. I actually own three fandom tarots. I own the Vertigo Tarot, which is based on Vertigo comics and a lot of, particularly the Sandman comics, but it's not the Sandman Tarot, it's Vertigo Tarot. I own the Justice League Tarot, which I have a copy for sale. Feel free to DM me about that. But I do have a copy I might be giving away, because I'm really a Marvel girl. I'm not a DC girl. I like some DC quite a bit, but I'm not really a DC person. So there's that. So I have that. And I also have the Welcome to Night Vale Tarot, which, again, I don't actually use any of those three decks. Like, I'll be real with you. The Vertigo Tarot, it's a little tricky to read with. It's all very dark. And again, I don't know the Vertigo fandom as well. I know the Sandman stuff extremely well, but I don't know the wider Vertigo universe as well. And Justice League, I'm fairly hopeless with. If it's not some of the major characters, I don't know anything. But Welcome to Night Vale, it's interesting because Welcome to Night Vale is actually the only podcast I've ever really listened to. Shocking, right? Because I have one. I have some auditory processing issues. I'm definitely one of those people who you'll say something and I'll go, what? Oh, like as you're re-saying it, because it clicked then. And it's hard for me to kind of just sit there and listen. I also don't watch a lot of TV or movies for that matter for this reason, although I'll do movies a little bit more often than TV, because it's 2 hours and we're done, you know? It's not a commitment. So Welcome to Night Vale. The tarot deck was put out while I was still caught up on the show. I'm not caught up at this moment. It's been at least a year since I've listened. And it's really cool, but a lot of the minors don't really do it for me. Night Vale is such a rich fandom that it can be a little hard for me to really know every little facet. So, yes, I'm gatekeeping myself here. What you gonna do about it? But I don't read with it that much, although I really like having it, especially because I got the deck so early that I'm fairly certain I have a misprint in it. I think the world was put in as card number 22 instead of 21. I need to double check that I actually have that edition, which would be really fun. Yeah, so there are some official tarot decks out there, but there's also a lot of fan tarot decks, which I know it's sort of a gray area with fan art and legality and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not here for that conversation. I'm very pro-fandom. I don't think it's taking anything away from creators for fans to sell their art, especially if they're very clear that it's not official. But anyway, not really here to have that debate right now. More here to talk about just the fact that so many fandom decks exist. Several of my friends have the Steven Universe Tarot. I'm really a secondhand gamer, so I don't game a whole lot if it's not Pokemon. But I do know that Persona is all about tarot cards, and there's a Persona deck and Persona cards, and throwing that out there. Yeah, so I have a few friends with the Steven Universe deck. I have friends with Sailor Moon decks. What else are there? The Sailor Moon deck might actually be official, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sure there's bootlegs. Like, I've seen, like, Harry Potter tarot decks. Even if it's not an official deck that's put out, there's a lot of art that's drawn from tarot decks. There's a lot of, you know, sort of what we call fan casting, where you take a movie or book, or you can do this with tarot cards, and people do, and assign different characters or actors to it. So there's definitely people who talk about what energy, as far as tarot goes, their favorite characters from their fandoms have. So it's an interesting thing that has sort of a tangential relation to tarot and the media. You know, I think we're actually about exhausting my rambling on this subject. Wild, right? Yeah, I guess just to sort of recap. So we've had the idea of tarot in media. You know, thinking about different things like Buffy and Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I'm getting Charmed and Sabrina mixed up here. I'm sure there's a lot more. Oh, Supernatural, when the three death cards came out, or every card in the reading turned out to be death. You know, that's not really how that works. Although it could be interesting to do a tarot card reading with multiple decks. That's something that kind of comes up in The Raven Cycle by Maggie Stiefvater. Right, there's the tarot deck that Maggie Stiefvater made to go with that, the Raven Prophecy Tarot. I had a copy of that. I gave it to Rory of Sassafras Tarot, who I interviewed a couple episodes ago. And she really likes reading with it. So that's cool. I really wanted to like that deck. But again, like I said with my fandom decks, I don't tend to enjoy reading with them for whatever reason. And I like to give away decks if I'm not using them because, you know, someone should be enjoying them. So yeah, there's a portrayal of tarot in media. There's tarot's leaking into pop culture, which is almost exclusively major arcana. The Lovers of Death, right? I forgot the Lovers. The Lovers of Death card, the Star, the Chariot. Those are, I guess, the Chariot gets some play. You don't see as many minors, which is, again, really disappointing to me. Not that there's anything wrong with majors-only reading, but I just think that the minors just give so much depth to it. Ah, yes, I also have an Alice in Wonderland deck, majors-only deck, that a friend of mine gave to me. So that was really, really sweet of my friend Kirsten. So, shout out. Kirsten's also a patron, has been an early patron of mine, and I really appreciate her support. And her letting me know when I've made her cry. So, yeah, so we have that. And we also have fandom and tarot, which is a really interesting subset. And not at all surprising to me. Because tarot deals with archetypes and storytelling. So putting together storytelling and both the stories that we tell about the media we love and the wanting to explore the stories that we love through this other paradigm is really cool. So yeah, that's my ramble on tarot and media. I hope you enjoyed it. We've come to the, hey, support me portion of the podcast. So as I mentioned, you can see me at least two events in October, October 12th and 13th. October 12th, I'll be in Hamilton Park in downtown Jersey City, a short walk from the Newport and Grove Street PATH stations. You can access me from either. On October 13th, I'll be at Harborside Atrium, which is accessible from the Exchange Place PATH, although you can't really get to the Exchange Place PATH from New York City that day, something to pay attention to. You can take a ferry that will drop you off literally right outside the entrance. And if you're in Jersey City, at least now you have a frame of reference. It's right by the Exchange Place PATH and Exchange Place Light Rail. So those are two in-person events you can support me at coming up soon, just about 2 weeks from now. And if you would like to support the podcast, the easiest way for you to do this at this moment is to become a patron of mine on Patreon. $1 a month gets you a discount from my Etsy. You get access to my Discord where you can chat with me and other awesome patrons. All my patrons are great. It's a great setup. More dollars per month equal more perks. At $5 a month, you start getting bigger readings. Like, you get at least one reading from me for free for the year. More at higher levels. And if you are a $20 a month subscriber, you get a personalized 3-card reading to your email. It is not a general reading. I pull 3 cards just for you and do a reading just for you. You'll see me talk about readings if you are a Patreon patron, even if you are not a $20 subscriber, because when I first started, I was offering those two lower levels, but I had to stop doing that because I had too many wonderful patrons. I might be opening that back up as a special for $10 patrons soon. So keep an eye on my Patreon and my Instagram. Another thing, if you can't spend money on me, becoming a supporter of mine on Instagram and Facebook, hugely, hugely helpful. I'm Anti-Fragile Tarot on both. Please find me, interact with me, like my stuff, comment on my stuff. I'll comment back. It'll be super fun. And you can also, you know, again, if you want to spend some cash, I do have my Etsy available. I'm Anti-Fragile Tarot on Etsy. And you can get one-off readings from me. I have readings from $5 and up. I do have readings available for cheap. It is a thing. I will always have some kind of $5 reading for you. I promise. So, the final thing that you can do to show your support, if you don't want to do any of that, if you don't use social media, emails. I would love an email from you. I'm antifragiletarot@gmail.com. Please feel free to email me with your thoughts, your comments, your journey, your ideas. I would always love more podcast ideas. Always, always open to it. Please let me know what you want to hear, because I'm doing this so you can enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in, whether this was your first episode or your 50-somethingth episode. I really appreciate your support. I wouldn't bother to record if I didn't have people listening. So, thank you. And I hope this is useful to you. That's, by the way, how I end almost all of my tarot card readings. I hope this was useful for you. All right. I hope you have a witchy and or wonderful day whenever you hear this. And I will be back in 2 weeks with another episode, probably Halloween-y themed. As a final note, we're in the High Holy Days now, so Shana Tova to my fellow chosen folks. It's Jewish New Year. Happy New Year to us. May your name be inscribed and sealed in the Book of Life, and I hope to see you all next year. And I hope we all get to hear the Shofar Blow next year as well. All right. Take it easy. Bye.